You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, when I woke up this morning, there was so much news. I was bombarded with so much stuff. I mean, the untimely death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter in that helicopter crash, which was an intensely personal thing, particularly for people in the United States or America. Then there was the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, which I thought about you when I was watching, because there's lots of accounts of people, you know, people in their 90s. And I thought to myself, in 10 years' time, there's going to be nobody that can talk about this. So, like, there will, in 2 or 3 years' time, there will be nobody left to talk about the Second World War. And I thought, we've got to keep this alive. And then there was the coronavirus. But going back to the Auschwitz thing, I mean, do you have people that have touched your life and your family's life that were involved in that?
My wife is, not personally. No. My grandparents came from Lithuania.
Yes.
So they came at the turn of the last century during the Boer War, that era. So not personally, but my wife is very involved now in the Holocaust Center. They call it the Genocide Center now in Johannesburg, which has opened recently. And they have weekly or seminars and talks and that. And a lot of the survivors, there are still some survivors here. Now, the survivors are people who were young at that stage, who went in as almost teenagers.
Well, not
or even,
younger
than younger. That. Yeah.
The chap I saw this morning on the BBC was 11 when he was interned.
You're right.
And because he was fit, he was then therefore deemed to be able to work. And he said he spent 3 years there digging graves. Yeah. Because he was young and fit.
The story's horrific. The stories are horrific and how it affected people. I don't think any of the people who spent their lives in Auschwitz or any other camps ever came out normal. I put normal in inverted commas.
Yeah.
And it's only now that they're starting to talk out. And I think that a lot of these centers or museums, I don't know what you call them. They don't want to call them museums because their awareness centers are there to keep it alive and to make sure that genocide of that kind of nature never happens again. And, you know, throughout history, I mean, the murder of the Jews was one of many genocides that's taken place. Rwanda was another one.
Exactly.
There are many there. And generally, they all follow the same kind of course in that. But it's I know that they had talks in Yad Vashem, which is in Jerusalem, and Prince Charles spoke, Putin was there, Mike Spence. So what is important is that it's kept alive and it's never allowed to happen. Lindsay, I must say one of the things at the moment that is worrying the Jewish community is that anti-Semitism is on the rise again.
Yes.
You've seen it in Europe. We've seen it in the UK. And it all follows the same kind of pattern, you know, the dehumanization of people and so on. So I think from a community point of view, the Jewish community is globally very, very concerned about the rise of neo-Nazism that we're seeing at the moment. But it's these centers help correct people, you know, help. And the more publicity you get, you know, the more you're able to address these issues.
But anti-Semitism has always been there, but unfortunately it's the rise of the right-wing political parties that has sort of encouraged them. They're not going out there and overtly saying, right, we don't like the Jews, we don't like black people, we don't like this. It's just that people pick up on their hatred. And I have to say that there are people at the top of the world's greatest democracies that aren't doing much to stop this, if you see what I mean.
No, I know. It's a worry, and the communities try their best to stop this hatred, and it bridges. It's not only Jews. It's many other religions as well. Look, in India as well. I mean, you see what's happened now, where Modi is now starting to. He's giving citizenship to Hindus all around the world, I think, and to maybe other religions, but not Muslims, you know.
Yes,
that
exactly.
kind of attitude. I don't know Indian politics at all, but I find it rather surprising that you're getting these kind of issues.
Yeah, well, and of course, the Nobel Peace Prize winner that was in The Hague recently was there under scrutiny because of the persecution of the Rohingya Muslims. And then, of course, the Chinese who have blatantly built camps in order to, I don't know, desanitize or just obliterate these people's beliefs. It's going on all the time. And don't forget Syria as well, David. I mean, we're getting a bit political where I am, rather. But Syria has been subjected to genocide for, I don't know, how many years is it now? 7, 8 years?
It keeps going, listen, I'm not an expert on this. I just I watch from this. I don't want to say I watch from the sidelines, but I'm concerned from the sidelines. But it's troubling because you never understand the source of this hatred and mistrust. I've always, to be honest, I've always lived in peace in South Africa. When it's come to religious freedom, I've never, and to be honest, I've never suffered from any anti-Semitism here. Ignorance, yes, sure, but not blatant anti-Semitism.
In that case, we should move on now to something else which has happened, which is an unusual event, David, because when I woke up, I was watching the CNN coverage of various news events last night at about 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, your time, and I saw the Kobe Bryant story unfolding, and then I looked at my S&P screen, which opens at around about midnight, S&P futures, and they came in down 30, 35 points. Normally what would happen these days is that the algorithmic traders and the machines come in and they buy them back, because that's been the pattern of the last 11 years or so, buy the dips. Now we've gone from down 35 to down 53 on the S&P futures, 20 minutes ahead of the opening as we pre-recorded this podcast. This looks a little bit different, and people are saying to me, well, if the coronavirus is an excuse, but I don't know, it doubles every day, the number of people, and if it carries on like this with 50 million people now with travel restrictions and President Xi saying this is a crisis, this is a problem suddenly.
It could be a problem. It's probably too early to panic, although everybody is panic, and people are saying, look, I'd rather panic now and reverse my trades later. So it's building on itself. Admittedly, I think that markets had run ahead of themselves, and the traders were looking for an excuse to sell. But we don't know. It's admittedly confined to China. I don't think it's really spread to the rest of the world yet, although there are cases, but not serious cases. I think most of it is centered around China, and that's the concern. What will it do to the Chinese economy? And we're suddenly learning how many businesses have connections to China, whether it's in the airlines, whether it's spending in a consumer spending, whether it's an LVMH or an Estee Lauder or Disney, who have got theme parks there. But one's got to be, vigilant and just watch where this goes. I don't want to be flippant upon it, about it. I don't want to just dismiss it. But I think that I'm not taking action yet. But we'll watch very carefully whether or not they can get this under control. If it gets out of control, of course, it can have, dire circumstances, as we learned in, 2003, with the SARS virus.
Yes, but that was contained. This one seems a little bit more serious because of the swift action has been taken by the Chinese authorities, and also the words of President Xi. And it was very interesting because I live in Rotterdam at the moment, and I live on the River Maas. And Rotterdam, of course, is the biggest port in Europe, and I think it's the fourth biggest port in the world. So people are coming in and out, and sailors and so forth. And my local doctor is centred in the Port Health Centre, it's called. And that's where people, sailors come in when they've been on a two-month trip or something from wherever it is, typically China these days, and they're a little bit sick and the ship's doctor can't treat them, so they come to the Port Health Centre. I was talking to my doctor and he said that this thing it can be dormant for 2 weeks, and he doesn't know whether the Chinese chap or the Taiwanese chap or whatever is infected. Yeah. So it can spread so easily. They just cough on you or breathe on you, and you've got it. So it can't be contained. It cannot be contained.
Yeah. No, I think that's the germination, is 2 weeks incubation, sorry. And I think that's the concern. We won't know for a couple of weeks, whether or not it's contained. But I mean, so markets are, you know, markets are under pressure on that. Commodity prices coming down. I just saw the palladium price flick across my screen. That's down about 2 or 3% today. It's back at 2,300. Brent is now below 60, and so we get commodities falling quite dramatically on our market here. The Kumbas and the Northams and the Anglos and Assors, all the mining stocks that rely on Chinese demand, are taking quite a knock. And I would imagine, though, if you look at European stocks, I haven't looked at some of the airlines or some of the some of the luxury goods stores. They would be under similar kind of pressure. But that's, Lindsay, we live like this. This is markets. You're going to get, whether you call it a black swan moment or black swan incident like this, they're going to come from time to time. And you've just got to work your way through it. But what the longer term consequences, I can't say. You know, it's too early. Caring 4.5%.
Historically speaking, of course, it'll mean nothing. It'll be just a tiny, tiny blip on a long-term chart. But I know one thing. One thing is for certain. If the market does go down, Mr. Trump will say it's nothing to do with him. It's to do with the virus.
Well, there you are. You know, that happens. This one he can't control. You know, he's got no control over this one. And it does highlight just how markets do work. There was confidence, if there was confidence in the global economy that things were great in the United States, well, it would reverse. We're going to have our test when we get all the tech results coming through, and to see whether that can reverse sentiment or not, or how deep these worries are. So I think it's going to be, it's going to be a very important couple of weeks. Not that any other week is not important, but. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to analyze results. I think in the meantime, there's a flight into gold and there's a flight into the safety of bonds and so on. But I haven't taken action yet. It's too early to. We've got a lot of margin from last year. In other words, we haven't been into the market this year, so we've got still some cash, but. I've got to watch and see where this goes.
Well, keep watching, because as we pre-record this interview 15 minutes before the US opening, we've got the Dow Jones futures down 1.6%. Let's have a look now. The FTSE down 2.3%. FTSE down 2.3%. DAX in Frankfurt, 2.6% weaker. CAC 40 in Paris, 2.6% weaker. Tokyo this morning down 2%. And so it goes on. And the gold price, which was in the 1540s last week, has rallied to 1583, up 11. The platinum price, because it's an industrial metal, down 20. Palladium is now $200 or more below its highs of 10 days ago that we were speaking about with other commentators on this show, you and I. So it's a little bit of interest.
These are ugly days. I mean, it's because people are, not quite sure what to do. You don't like it. One likes good news. You want to be in a market that's going up and where things are happening. But what's interesting on our market, Lindsay? What's the time now? It's after four. Trade is barely 11 billion rand. So there's very little actually going through here in terms of, trade action. I would have thought that in this case it would be quite a lot, but it'll probably end up maybe, with trade towards the end, we might get up to 15, 16 billion, which is not heavy. But the indices look ugly. Yeah, here we're down about 2.5%.
Yeah, it's not good. And Vernon Philander has just come to the crease with South Africa now 239 for six. Quinton de Kock
for
is-
six.
Yeah, 239 for six now. They were doing so well when there was when they were only two down with what was his name? That chap that you like,
Van Dussen.
Van
der Dussen. Yeah,
he's a really good player. But England, unfortunately, are doing. I mean, decimating your poor team. Woolies this morning. The two things that really caught my eye this morning about Woolies was the more than 8%, or let's round it off and say 8% increase in food sales, because they're one of the most high quality food retailers in the world, I would say. I mean, outside of places like Fortnum and Masons and Harrods, I think the Woolies in South Africa is absolutely brilliant. But also, They said, rather belatedly, we're having a look at our floor space in Australia because of increase in online sales. Yeah. I mean, they must be 5 years behind the times.
Totally. When you look at this company, I know despite the, or just looking at the half year results, they're down whichever, they're going to have to apply IFRS 16. That's the common standard now. They're down 15% or 12-15% in profits. And I argue, Lindsay, I argue profits are down. Why must multiples go up? In other words, why must PEs be up? I don't want to buy a company that's losing money or whose profits are diminishing. I must put the right words in.
Yes.
Whose profits are diminishing. Why must I pay 15 times earnings? I only want to pay 7 times earnings or 6 times earnings or 5 times earnings. You know, that's I can't see things changing dramatically in a positive fashion that should make me want to pay up for these shares. And I agree with you on the food side, brilliant. On the merchandising side, not so brilliant.
No.
If you look at Country Road, profits down. Elizabeth Street, David Jones, battling. I know they've put in new CEOs to turn the company around. But I think looking at all the retail results, trying to sum up, I still think there's a lot more downside that's necessary. I think that we're still too hopeful on where profits are going to go. And that's why I'm saying, why should we pay up for companies who are not able, because of the economy, to really increase profits? You know, meaningfully. I'm not talking nominally being nominal GDP. You know, there's no real growth in consumption here, etc. So I think our market, from that point of view, taking away the virus worries, still, I think, on the expensive side.
Yeah, the virus worries are a nice little side issue. But it is real, and it's giving people an excuse. And as I said earlier on in my introduction, the difference with today's action is that the machines have not come in and taken us from 30 points down on the S&P to unchanged by the close. We're now down very close to our lows, with 5-10 minutes to go to the opening, down 1 2/3%. These are big, big numbers from a high base. Okay. I mean, 1 2/3% down on the S&P in terms of billions of dollars worth destroyed value is quite a lot.
No, it's big. No, it's a big move. And remember, we had this on Friday as well. So I think building on that, to an extent, there's a bit of relief. We've been waiting for that shoe to drop. Say, okay, it's dropped now. It just seemed uncomfortably high that it was being pushed up during the early part of the year. You know, we've had a good year. We can understand the turnaround. I think we need a bit of a breather. Whether it's been brought on by the virus or not, I don't think makes any difference. It just gives us some breathing space now and say, okay, the correction's taking place. Let's reassess where we are.
And you've got money waiting in the wings, haven't you? You've got money waiting in the wings.
Yes.
But how long do you wait? When do you start easing this money into a market?
First of all, when this dies down, if it does die down, and hopefully it does, hopefully they get on top of it, and then we assess the numbers. You know, I listen very carefully to the interviews that came out of that came out of Davos, and I took notice. I think climate change is going to be a very big subject. Yes. And I was encouraged by the way that corporate leaders are adapting to the problem. They realize that they can't just brush it aside. They've got to take it seriously. But I think there seems to be a better view about the global economy. You know, I'm not saying it's running away, but they seem to suggest that it was stabilizing, and a lot of issues that had brought them down last year were not going to happen. I think another thing that comes through is that there's a realization that governments have to do more, that you can't rely on monetary policy. In other words, you can't rely on central banks to give markets a lift. Governments have also got to come to the party. So against that backdrop, there's a slightly better feeling about where we are. It does. We can't see inflation's not a problem. Interest rates are not a problem. But I think corporates can, you know, can do something and can produce relatively decent results. I have to qualify all of this. I'm not expecting a magnificent year in terms of the stock market. If we get any positive yields, I'm talking on the US, on global markets, you know, 5%, 6%, or something around there, I'll be thrilled. You know, that's I would pencil it against the against what we got last year. I'd be very thrilled with you know, something in the region of 5, 6, 7%, simply against this backdrop, which is fine. You know, it's positive, but I wouldn't. I'm not positioning ourselves for anything magnificent.
Okay, David, thank you very much for that. I'd love to talk about football, but it was just the FA Cup, and it was a bit, I don't know, I don't watch I don't watch the FA Cup anymore, I'm sorry.
No, you should have watched Shrewsbury. Come on. He has a third division side, in other words, a League One side. I think it's League One. They might even be League Two. Somewhere in the Shropshire, you know the UK very much far
yes,
better
and,
than
and,
I do.
Yes, in fact, the local word for Shropshire is Salops, Salop rather. But anyway, yeah, I know Shrewsbury because they knocked Ipswich Town out in the 1980s in a big shock. So anyway, describe why you like
you've
the
got a village. Well, you've got a little village green kind of pitch. Now the pitch was fine. You can't. So Liverpool, and you've got Liverpool's second team, a lot of youngsters there who are being groomed to play in the first team, and you've got this side. And they were quick to win, to go into the lead, Liverpool, and unfortunately there was an own goal, 2-0 up, and Shrewsbury come back. And believe me, Liverpool got away with murder. They had their chances in that, but Shrewsbury were outstanding. And it was just a wonderful game to watch. These triers, these chaps who, yes. I don't know what they get in a week, maybe a couple of £100 a week or something. Just give them a good run. So credit to them. It's, you know, and it, I promise you it was close.
Yeah, but the thing is about the you know what I don't like about it? It's almost as though that the teams like Liverpool, who want to obviously save themselves for the big money spinners like the English Premier League title and the UEFA Champions League, it's as though they try and dilute the importance of the FA Cup, yeah. And that's why I don't watch it. I don't want to see a 16-year-old trainee playing for Liverpool in a Liverpool shirt when Mo Salah should be playing. And it says something about what they think of Shrewsbury. It's almost disrespectful in a way.
It is disrespectful. And towards the end, believe me, they had to bring Mo Salah on. And without much luck. I know, it is disrespectful. I mean, from that point of view, I understand that they have to rotate their squads, but you know, next I think when they get to Liverpool, when they get to the main stadium, I mean the replay, they'll probably bring the big guns out, just nervous of any upset. Although Jurgen Klopp probably says, "Listen, I've got enough, I've had enough," but they should be geared for it. They should have enough players of high quality to actually handle it. But I agree with you. But it was nevertheless it was a great little match. Can't say that about the other games.
No,
that was the highlight.
No, it was rubbish.
Just Lindsay Palladium 3.5% down now. Yeah, platinum down. Gold slightly better. Gold hasn't really responded, eh? Nothing brilliant. But I'm looking at some of the lead down 2.7, copper down 2.4. So it gives you an idea of some of the sell-offs that we're seeing in those markets.
If you've been long of a market over the last week or so, for example, you're a short-term trader, anything that is up, you sell. I mean, I remember when the big sell-off in 87 came along and various other sell-offs since then. It doesn't matter what it is. People say, oh, you should be buying gold because equities are going down. No, because people are selling gold in order to pay their margin calls.
Yes.
So it doesn't go up as much. And people haven't gone into the gold market long. In other words, it's been in the 1550s just before. So there's not a big long position. So I can understand the muted response from gold, if you see what I mean.
I think you bring a very important point up. That's when you have markets like this, once they cross a certain point, you start to squeeze traders on margin calls, and that's why sometimes the selling is exaggerated or is so so radical.
Yes.
You know, such a heavy, heavy sell-off is that because it is run by traders. And when you get squeezed, when you get up 10 times and you're getting squeezed, boy, you begin to feel it. So that's exactly what you're saying is happening at the moment.
David, thank you very much for your insight. As always, that's David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasson Securities. He'll be back with me tomorrow with our resident broker for the 5 o'clock shadow. But that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.